So back to the first page. Micchatiti Gandhaba Sotapanna, number 4. He goes on. In many suttas, including Mahasachaka, meaning Great 40, and Bodhiraja Kumara, King Awakening something. Both in these two suttas, the Buddha described how he saw Gandhabas moving from one physical body to the next in a single human bhava. With the Pubenisnivasa, I'm terrible here, sorry. Pubenivasanusati jnana. Jnana, Nana, means jnana, like knowledge. And so there are two types of knowledge he'll talk about. Pubenivasanusati. Terrible, terrible. I'm a failure. So please don't judge me too harshly for my poor Pali pronunciations. But this type of jnana or knowledge is basically about previous human births. And so Buddha himself, in his time of enlightenment, spoke later how he saw human Gandhabas. What the heck is this? Human Gandhaba? So in this case, we're talking about non. See, that's why he used the term Gandhaba. And this guy doesn't understand that it's confusing the way he's using it. I don't know why he doesn't understand that, but human Gandhabas means human beings who've left their body and are in a spirit form. It's not the same as the Gandharva class of astral or non-physical entities. So we're saying we're using the term Gandhaba not only for that category of astral entity, Gandharva musician, but for the non-physical astral form of a human being who's died. So that's one reason this is it's got very complicated and confusing, this writing, because he's using Gandhaba a few different ways simultaneously. The point is that people die and go from one body to the next in a single human bhava. Bhava is a realm or becoming, meaning from human death to human rebirth. And he explains that while Aryas, or those that have had some of the four awakenings, with jhanas, meaning attainment in meditation to particularly the formless realms, the four formless jhanas or trances. So Aryas with jhanas can attain both this pubenivasanusati jhana, meaning they can attain understanding about their previous human rebirths, and the chatupapada, meaning knowing about your past births in other realms, in all realms. So yogis can, these are two different powers. One is knowing about your previous human births. The other one is knowing about past births in all realms. Other yogis can mostly acquire only the first one, i.e., they can see only their previous human births. And he says that note that this is related to the last type of micchatiti, to believe that no such Aryas or yogis exist. Right. So, Gautama, on the night he attained complete and perfect awakening, had both of these jhanas or knowledges. One is about his previous human births. Previous human births. The other one was about all of his previous births. Generally, yogis can acquire only the first, meaning all their human births, rather than all births, meaning I remember when I was a cockroach on Maldek or something like that. Not me. The people, obviously, the 10th wrong view believes that these people are all insane. And there's nobody with such ability. It's all your superstition, imagination, fantasy. And if you tell a doctor and you're unwell, if you go to a clinic or you're psychologically unwell and emotionally unstable, and you tell them you believe you've seen some of your previous human births or some of your past births in other realms, they will give you medication or involuntarily put you in the hospital. So there is some wisdom to not sharing some of your beliefs if you're not in a good way. And in fact, there are a lot of people in this world who react like demons to certain metaphysical truths. And it frightens them, it upsets them, it angers them. They can't handle it. It doesn't upset them. They upset themselves, and they anger themselves. They destabilize themselves by hearing some of these views, that some people have this knowledge and they don't. Going on, he writes, in the Sutta links above, the Pali version is correct, but English and Sinhala, meaning Sri Lankan, Ceylon, translations are not correct, because there's no distinction made between these two types of jnana, or, you know, knowing all your human rebirths versus knowing all rebirths, or all previous births. And he says, with the first jnana, which is knowledge, the jnana, jnana pada, or the jnani, is the knower, from the word gnosis. With the word, or, you know, the root before gnosis. With the word, with the first jnana, one can see previous human births, and with the second, one can see previous births in all 31 realms. So, not only my past life as a cockroach on Maldek, but when I was in these other planes in between human births or other births, that can be seen too. Of course, that's what higher self or a seventh entity knows. He goes on, by the way, hereafter, and he's going to provide sutta references, and they're in Pali. And he says, however, it must be kept in mind that some translations are incorrect, as mentioned above, and also with translations of anicca and anatta. So this guy is a very hardcore scholar, and you can see, just to understand what the teaching is, you have to actually approach the academics. And you have, you know, monks in temples who may not be able to explain things as well as an academic. And some academics, some who've been trained by monks, have a great understanding, even if they don't have an attainment. And others have an attainment, but they can't explain it so well. And others are the leader of a large sangha and have no attainment. They have not even sotapanna. That's what's going on today. Going number five. Sorry for my rough and ready speed here, but I think you can get it. Number five. We also need to realize that Paraloa, or the world of Gandhava, of both humans and animals, which means not just the Gandharva, but all non-physical entities, he writes, is not a separate realm. And he goes on, and this is an interesting Buddhist teaching on the astral plane, because to say human Gandhava is very silly. It just means a non-physical, you know, human in the non-physical, in the 3D, having dropped the 3D shell, but not fully, in the time-space portion of the yellow ray body, as Ra would say. So, but to call that a human Gandhava just makes trouble, because they're not human, they're not heavenly musicians. They're souls in between death and rebirth. But as we can see with movies and perspectives that I think are very credible, like Astral City or our home, Chico Xavier's account, it seems clear to me, and a hardcore Buddhist and he would disagree, that after death, the human entity is not just hovering around waiting to jump into a womb. But indeed, Paraloka, is really an aspect of Kamaloka between the physical and the non-physical. It seems to be a term used to describe the level, the experience of Kamaloka third density, midway between space-time and time-space, or a time-space aspect, a time-space plane or dimensionality or experience of Kamaloka, of third density, that's not totally cut off or divorced from the physical, from space-time. So 3D time-space experience, astral, lower astral, not yet fully distinct from space-time. That's Paraloa. He writes, in all other 29 realms, meaning not Paraloa, beings are born fully formed instantaneously, Opapatika, contrary to the ninth Michaditi on the list above, meaning contrary to the wrong view, meaning the right view, is that indeed, you know, this, his writing is very convoluted, or his thinking, I'm not sure what the point is. In the ninth wrong view, which rejects the view of fully formed instantaneous births in certain planes, which does happen, in Paraloa, things are a little bit different. So he says in all other 29 realms, so Paraloa maybe is two realms, two of the planes. So, you know, they've got the word realm and plane and world, dimension, density. They're basically all the same, but there are fine distinctions. So at this point, I think 31 planes of seven dimensions of three worlds, you know, Kamaloka, Rupaloka, Arupaloka, that threefold division of the 31 planes, which he's calling realms, is okay. But the higher number, the 31 or 29 here, is when there are divisions of the three, which is basically third density Kamaloka, and fourth and fifth density Rupaloka, and sixth and seventh density Arupaloka. But this is an integrated cosmology between Buddhism and the raw material, Western metaphysics, including theosophy, and the raw material, and early Buddhism, unified cosmology. Of cosmic structure. That's helpful, you know. These guys, they know a lot. They know more than us, or they know more than me. And so I go to them seeking to learn. He goes on, those instantaneous births, of course, do not involve a mother's womb, and one bhava means just one jati. Jati is birth. Bhava means realm or incarnation. But it's complicated. So there's the human bhava, which is not the same as the human jati, or human birth. And he goes on, for example, a deva or a brahma is born once instantaneously, meaning in a higher dimension. And then death occurs only when the karmic energy for the bhava, meaning that incarnation in that realm, is exhausted. And so that is just something to keep in mind of, you know, there are some wanderers who come over the years and said, oh, I met my ET parents. So, meaning that's a person who thinks that they were in another dimension as children. Perpetually? Were you always a child? They're your parents. Are they, what, 10 million years old and you're 4 million years old? They haven't thought it through. Their psychological process is influenced their metaphysics. There is a very imperceptible aging. There is certainly very subtle development, obviously, in higher dimensional incarnations or higher dimensional births. But a child born from the gestation and womb and fetus and infancy and all of that, which we have in humanity, you know, from birth to adulthood or something, that maturation development may not be happening or seems not to be happening in higher dimensions. And so the Buddhist understanding of why an entity doesn't stay in a higher dimension is because its karmic energy for the bhava, or the being, the incarnation in the realm, the incarnation in that dimension, is exhausted. Now, this is not saying that everybody is a wanderer, obviously. In fact, one just has to understand that from my quick pass understanding of Buddhism here is that only monks or only people who've developed meditation in the jhanas will be reborn temporarily in Rupa Loka or Arupa Loka before coming back to Earth. So there's a lot more integration to make here. Talking about being reborn and Rupa Loka above third density. Does that mean that Buddhism is saying humans who what haven't harvested can be reborn in fourth density and then come back to third? I don't think so. But a monk, it's all very complicated, but a monk that can get into the higher jhanas may well be harvestable to fourth density anyway. And Buddhism is very much focused on the value of human birth rather than the goal being reincarnation to a higher density where you just achieve awakening there. But that can be done. And in fact, it's probably commonly done. So it gets very complicated, but this notion of upapatika or instantaneous rebirth in higher dimensions was controversial in other sects, meaning other groups at the time didn't believe that, and I guess believed that birth in any other dimension would have to be just the way it is here. Anyway, he goes on. The difference in the human and the animal realms is that those dense physical bodies have lifetimes much smaller than the karmic karma, karmic energies for the two bhava. And the two bhava, meaning the two realms, incarnation of animal and human, he's saying that between these two incarnations in the human and the animal, the dense, his writing is very not clear. The karmic energies required for incarnation in human and animal is different. And this is why he's talking about 29 realms of the 31, where human and animal are taken out of the 31, and entities that are midway between incarnation in these two realms of human and animal, right? An entity, a human in between births, or an animal spirit in between births, they're called Gandhavas for him, which is a terrible way of putting it, actually, because it makes people think, makes me think of Gandharva, or a particular class of heavenly angelic entity doing music. They're not. This is not what's going on here. We're just talking about entities in the flow between incarnation. But again, the Buddhist view here is really without any kind of social structure available. It's sort of just you're on your own, waiting for the next free womb. And that's not the really the way it is. But he's really saying that entities don't stay in this intermediate position of paraloa between human rebirths or between animal rebirths for very long because the karma for that is not great. He goes on, when a human or an animal dies, and if there's leftover karmic energy for the human or animal bhava, meaning to come back into a physical body of a human or animal, then a Gandhava, meaning the spirit, the entity, comes out of the dead body and waits for a suitable womb to be born, jati again, in the same bhava, the same realm. So, waiting for rebirth in the same level, meaning human or animal, for these types of quote Gandhavas, or non-physical astral entities, or entities on the astral plane. That these are the two of the 29 where there isn't this sort of instantaneous birth. But it's a little messy because actually an entity is instantaneously appearing in an astral form after death. So, anyway, it gets super complicated, but the point is that in the understanding of the 31 planes, two of which are animal and human, in the intermediate phase between incarnations, here being called Paraloa, Paraloka, which is just another phase, basically, of Kamaloka, or another aspect of Kamaloka, which is the lowest of the three realms, which includes here the animal, I guess, or the animal as one of one level of Kamaloka below, I guess what, it's below the human, but they have astral experience also. They're not instantaneously born, but anyway, I'm not sure what that is, but this, the Buddhist notion is that after you die, you're basically kind of on your own, and hovering, or something like that, waiting for a suitable womb. I think that that's extremely simplistic and mistaken, and primitive. It deserves primitive. And I don't know if Gautama said these things, you say. So, now we're getting real complicated. And he makes another very minor point here. Thus, contrary to the widespread belief, Gandhaba, meaning this human or animal intermediate state beingness, is not an Antarabhava, meaning in between bhava, antara means in between, but rather is in the same bhava, meaning it's in the same realm of animal or human. Okay? The confusion arises without knowing the difference between bhava and jati, bhava meaning realm, jati meaning birth. So he's saying that this is a real nitpicking point. You wouldn't call it antara bhava or in between realm, which is sort of how I was saying it. But it's part of the same realm of animal or human, okay? It's just in between births, okay? 6. Until they find a suitable womb, these Gandhaba are in Paraloa, or the netherworld, which coexists with our world, but normally we cannot see those fine bodies of Gandhabas. Fine. I think it's really troublesome to keep using the term Gandhaba, but that's, I guess, the Buddhist term for human and animal beingness intermediate between incarnation. And so this is the intermediate. This is, you know, what the Tibetan Book of the Dead focuses on is the intermediate stage, the bardo, bardo tuttle. So, going on, he writes, thus a human may be reborn many times before switching to another existence, meaning another bhava. Deva, Brahma, animal, Preta. And again, the Buddhist view seems to be a distinct from the Western metaphysical view, where the Buddhist view seems to include that humans will go into the body of an animal occasionally or periodically. And I don't think that it's as common as that. He goes on, this is why rebirth stories indeed are common. It is the human bhava, the human realm or becoming, that is extremely hard to get, as the Buddha explained, but once in the human bhava, one could be born many times as a human, which is called reincarnation. The difference between bhava and jati is explained in his other writing. So, realm, existence, incarnation, bhava, or jati, birth. So, he writes, so, I hope one can understand the fact that one still has michiditti if one adamantly rejects the concept of Gandhaba or the concept of opapatika births. The concept of Gandhaba simply means that entities have an afterlife experience. Humans and animals don't dissolve into the void and are destroyed for all eternity after death. Duh. So, but this is an interesting point, actually, because if you talk to some New Age folks, many people actually believe that there is no afterlife and the connection is dead. Continuing. We're in the middle of point seven here. He's simply saying, if one still will have wrong views, if one adamantly rejects the idea that there is an afterlife for human beings. And the concept of opapatika or instantaneous birth doesn't seem to be one that most people think about. I don't hear most people saying, no, there's no instantaneous birth on other dimensions. Generally, the issue is, do people really believe that there are other dimensions of life? Frankly, most Western Christian-oriented people have a hard time with that. Jewish Christian and Muslim, other than the Sufis or the more mystical folks in Islam, pretty much all of those of the Abrahamic desert religions have a hard time with the idea of other dimensions of life coexisting with this one, simply invisible. They just can't get it. And if you don't get that, then incarnation as spiritual training, as a portion of path, and the value of morality and the reality of karmic law and causality, consequentiality beyond between lifetimes, those principles are all lost, are not recognized, and the person will get into trouble. And that's what we'll see down the line in another page in future weeks, how wrong view leads to trouble. So he goes on, if one has any one of the 10 Michaditti wrong views, one is not yet on even the mundane Eightfold Path. And he refers to other things he wrote. Number 8. In order to get to the Sotapanna stage, the first step is to make sure that one learns Dhamma and clear up any remaining doubts about those 10 types of Michaditti. And he goes on, when one gets rid of all 10 Michaditti wrong views, then one is truly on the mundane Eightfold Path. One is truly on the path, on the lower path, and later to get onto the noble Eightfold Path, but it's the same path, just seen differently. He goes on, then, at that point, meaning after one has really finished with these wrong views, or at least doesn't hold them hard, and realizes that there may be much more than one knows going on, like the long-term benefit, the long-term consequences of merit, like the importance of mother-father, metaphysical importance, like the reality of an afterlife and an intermediate stage between incarnation, and the reality that there are some seers and yogis and great beings in this world who have magic powers and know far more than we do. People who accept those realities are well settled in view to begin or to go further with complete self-transformation, not just intellectual, but working very deeply, that will have effects in the future, beyond this lifetime. So he goes on, when one has gotten rid of all these 10 wrong views, at that point, one's mind has been cleansed to a stage where one can comprehend the three marks, the three characteristics of nature, tilakana, anicca, dukkha, anatta. This, and he's calling this as a deeper michaditti or wrong view, the second type described in the Mahachatarisaka Sutta. So a deeper wrong view is not knowing the three marks, not knowing impermanence, insubstantiality, or stressfulness. Believing the opposite of these three is a deeper level wrong view. And he goes on, when one comprehends the three marks, tilakana, to some extent, one attains sotapanna stage of nibbana, but it's not intellectual. It's a pranic transformation of the seven chakra system. It doesn't happen just by thinking about these three marks. Then he goes on, that is when one gets to the Lokottara Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, so one begins the Noble Eightfold Path after one achieves Sotapanna. One achieves Sotapanna with the removal of wrong view, all of them, and the recognition of the three marks in a very deep way, but it's associated with pranic transformation of the seven chakras and the energy system and the seven energy bodies and the whole mind-body-spirit complex. So it's not simply thinking about the three marks and getting it and feeling like you're a Sotapanna. That's not it. But one can obviously be on spiritual path without having that attainment. He goes on, then by following the Noble Eightfold Path, one reaches the higher stages of Nibbana, culminating in Arahant. Number nine, the path to Nibbana has been covered for hundreds of years due to the fact that the above steps have not been cleared, has been covered for hundreds of years, meaning has been obscured. His English is, I think English is not his first language. It's been covered, meaning it's been obscured or hidden, in his view, for hundreds of years. Do the above steps have not been clear? I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think in past ages, people were not as materialistic as today. And then he goes on, and also the meanings of those key words, anicca, dukkha, anatta, have been distorted. And I would like to look into that further, his analysis of a more accurate translation of the three marks. He goes on, very importantly here, that slow process of degradation of Bodhidharma took place over about 1,500 years, but the most damage was done in the late 1800s, when the Europeans discovered the ancient Sanskrit and Pali documents. So you had a lot of, in the end of the 19th century, you had some Germans, Italians, and English getting into Sanskrit and Pali. And some of their initial translations were outrageously awful. He goes on, they first discovered Sanskrit, Hindu, Vedic literature in India. Buddhism had disappeared from India long before that. And then later came across the Pali Tipitaka in Sri Lanka, Burma, and other Asian countries. The key problem arose when they assumed that Sanskrit words anitya and anatma are the same as the Pali words anicca and anatta. I never heard of those two Sanskrit words. He goes on, the Sanskrit words anitya and anatma do mean impermanent no self, okay, but the Pali words anicca and anatta have totally different meanings. I'll look for his, down number 10, we'll see his write-up of these three, which we can move into later, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Number 10, that historical background is fully explained in many posts at the historical background section, but at least read the post starting with the incorrect Theravada interpretations historical timeline. So he's a real scholar, historical documentation of mistranslations. So you can just see how people get confused. I mean, it's really quite, throw my hands up in the air type situation. You have centuries of mistranslation and misunderstanding, and hundreds of thousands of people involved who don't realize that they're not getting accurate teaching. And he writes, correct meanings of anicca, dukkha, anatta are discussed in another section. I'm going to try to see if I can ride through this fast at the end here. 11. As for the instantaneous births, and this is, I think, not such a critical wrong view, because there are not that many people thinking about the manner of rebirth on higher dimensions. As for the instantaneous births, instances of such opapatika births occur in many suttas. Mahaparinibbana, when Gautama left, Buddha told Venerable Ananda about opapatika births of many people who died in a certain village. And there's long Sanskrit or Pali there. He goes on, as I mentioned, the translations are available in several languages. And he wrote an English translation as the nun Nanda Ananda. The nun Nanda, Ananda, meaning he's talking to Ananda, Gautama's talking to Ananda, the chief attendant, about the nun Nanda. The nun Nanda, Ananda, through the complete destruction of the five lower fetters, has arisen spontaneously in the Brahma worlds, and will attain final emancipation there, without returning from that world. So that's a great case. There's no sexism here. There's a nun who achieves Sotapanna. Sotapanna is complete destruction of the five lower fetters. Actually, I think this may be non-returner. Not just Sotapanna, but also once-returner or non-returner. It's a big deal. Actually, it may be non-returner, third stage. It's a big deal to break the five lower fetters. Has arisen spontaneously. So in the Brahma worlds, we're talking about, I believe, either upper Kamaloka or Rupaloka, and will attain final emancipation there, right? So it's possible to achieve complete and perfect awakening from higher dimensions, obviously. But the destruction of the five lower fetters, which we looked into a little bit, is a big deal and means she, the nun, was a non-returner. Number 12, he goes on, it must be noted, that there may be people who attain magapala. Maga means path, and pala is fruit, path and fruit, but had never even heard about Gandhaba in this life, right? If one contemplates tilakana, that is all needed, meaning that is all that is needed. And so, yeah, most people don't even know what you're talking about, Gandhaba. And it's not about that level of being, it's about, I mean, that level, that type of being, it's about that level of existence, non-physical or astral, in between incarnation. Certainly, there are very few people who would achieve Sotapanna without a metaphysical multidimensional perspective, actually. There are some. And so that's why he's saying, if you comprehend the three marks, that's really all that's necessary. And he says, in such cases, they had not rejected the concept of a Gandhaba. If someone explained the concept to them, they would accept it since they can see that it must be true, or they have no problem with it. So not knowing it doesn't mean I've rejected it. But when it's presented to one, the point here is that anyone who's had this contact with intelligent infinity, which Sotapanna seems to be, would acknowledge that there is non-physical existence. Then he goes on, however, if one has heard about the concept of a Gandhaba and Paraloa, instantaneous births, existence of other realms, and the existence of Aryas or Yogis who have the abilities to see such realms as well as Paraloa, and then one rejects them as nonsense, that's Mijaditi. Right. So today it's so easy to say nonsense, oh, that's bullshit. And, pride goeth before the fall. Finally, the only way to get rid of such mitiditi is to examine those concepts and convince oneself that those must be true. Even his way of writing is difficult. The way to get rid of them is to examine the beliefs and consider that you don't know everything. Consider the possible. Not just repeat the known. And so, but very few people want to do that. And the final section, 13, and we're going to end here, and sorry I've gone long, but I got to get this page out of the way. He says, in that process, it's also necessary that one lives a moral life, staying away from dasa akusala, which we'll talk about in the future, which is the wrong actions, immoral actions, as much as possible, as explained in the Living Dhamma section. It's important for anyone to experience the mental clarity and peace of mind, or nivima, that comes from staying away from dasa akusala. And that 10, it means actually 10 wrong actions, 10 immoral actions. Dasa is 10. Akusala is not kusala, meaning not healthy or helpful. I am not a Pali scholar, so I apologize profusely. But He is, and yet this material is very important. It's just very dense and a little difficult to read. So in the process of clearing wrong views, which people would which is a process generally not done by anyone with wrong views, because they don't think they're wrong views. They think they're right views. They think they know. There is no, you know, karmic consequence or other realms or higher developed beings or magic powers or non-physical entities. They know, they think they know all those things are not so. So they have no much interest in living a moral life either, generally. But he's saying it's important, and this is another point we can get into, not today, the mental clarity that comes from staying away from harmful action. And that's similar to what I've said, what Gautama called the pleasure of blamelessness. Finally, last three, the home stretch, he writes, by the way, the strongest of the dasa akusala is michaditti, which includes not only the 10 types of wrong views above, but also ignorance about tilakana, meaning ignorance about the three marks. So he's added that ignorance as one of the wrong views. This is why a sotapanna removes 99% or more of the defilements by getting rid of both types of michaditti, meaning the 10 wrong views above, and ignorance about the three marks, which he calls the other type of wrong view. Okay, so the point is that these 10 wrong views prevent a person from deeply transforming mind, and prevent a person, therefore, from deeply knowing life, and therefore prevent a person from knowing the three marks deeply, which in Buddhism is the doorway to sotapanna and all further development. And there are people in Hinduism and other traditions who don't have a complete and perfect enlightenment, it seems, and are not working through the 10, you know, they may be free of the 10 wrong views, but I don't think they've gotten to their awakening by contemplating the three marks. Nevertheless, if those three marks were presented to them, I'm sure they would agree that they are so. And that's the point. Just because a doctrine excludes a particular teaching doesn't mean that people following that doctrine or religion or tradition would reject those additional teachings if presented to them. That's the point. Then he says the first type of michaditti, this is very crazy, the first type of michaditti is the 10 views. All right, it took me 5 minutes to figure this out. The first type of wrong view is the 10 wrong views. The first type of michaditti, the first category of michaditti, is the 10 types discussed above, which includes believing that nothing happens without a cause, bad ideas, this is so convoluted. He writes, the first type of michaditti is about the 10 types discussed in number 3 above. Nobody reads this page, only me. So he's saying, first of all, that he's calling the first type of wrong view these 10 wrong views. And it rejects, it doesn't include believing, it actually, these wrong views reject or reject the view that nothing happens without a cause. Meaning, these wrong views believe that things happen without a cause. And they believe, they don't believe that bad causes, like the 10 wrong actions, lead to bad consequences and so on. Okay. So the first type of wrong view he's calling the 10 views that are all wrong. And then he's considering the second type of wrong view, not knowing the three marks. He says, the second type is not knowing the true nature of this world of 31 realms, i.e. that it's not possible to maintain anything to one's satisfaction, anicca. One is subject to suffering because of that, dukkha, and thus one is truly helpless in this reverse process, anatta, which is a funny way of reading the three marks. I guess that's what his view. Maybe he got that from the Sri Lankan monks. But, you know, everybody's got their different take on things. Anyway, he says, however, or we could say nonetheless, or regardless of all that, it is difficult to see. It's true. It's difficult to understand the three marks until one believes that there is a bigger picture. That there's a bigger picture than just the physical realm. And that includes the 31 realms. This bigger picture includes the idea of 31 planes and a rebirth process, where existence of Paraloa, or an intermediate realm between human and animal rebirths, with Gandhavas, or beings that are non-physical, human or animal, or any non-physical entity, is also an important component. So much parsing and caulking is needed here, but finally, and that'll be, this will be a whirlwind, and maybe we'll just end up with two files for this first talk, or the second one. and it might be worth talking about next time how his reading of the three marks is different than mine or others, where he's saying anicca, which is normally called impermanence, is the impossibility of maintaining anything to one's satisfaction. You see, his teacher may have thought that or read it that way, but that doesn't mean it's the only way. It means that his teacher got that from his teacher and learned it well by that interpretation. And so, but impermanence is, you know, the typical idea of impermanence doesn't contradict this idea that it's not possible to maintain anything to one's satisfaction because of impermanence. So, one is subject to suffering because of that, because of impermanence and anatta, and one is truly helpless in this rebirth process. Then you get into all sorts of trouble with the word helpless, and he's calling that anatta. So, sometimes his view of what is correct and all the others are wrong may be dispute worthy, even though he seems to be a great man and a great scholar and a very serious helper. To have written all this down for people to read is a really great offering. And next time we're going to go further into the 10 types of akusala, or dasa akusala, as well as a page he wrote called The Hidden World of the Gandhava Netherworld. And we'll see what else we want to do to integrate, to basically distill the essential teachings that he's presenting, which are many. So I hope this was all right for you. Whoever's still here, congratulations for your bravery and perseverance. So thank you again. Please take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.